Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, life is bigger. It's bigger.
On KMOX, two of our pals are in, Steve Ewing and John Pistone, from tons of bands, but today from The Urge.
Yes.
Have some shows coming up. Good to see you, boys.
Likewise, Dave.
Thank you for having me. Been a while, man. Sorry about your troubles, man. Thinking about you a couple months ago when the store was getting trashed and the dog thing. Yeah. And
It was a rough week.
Yeah, you went through some. Week. Yeah. How you doing? Things back to...
We're on the other side of it.
That's good.
That's how I say it. Yes. We're getting back to normal life.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Business good, Steve?
Business is good. We're in a good season, so
yeah.
Oh, and Andrew and I, in particular, are super excited for the Smashburgers to open at the new Wash At Food Hall.
Get a chance
hall.
To actually showcase the burgers. They're really good.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome to have that within walking distance, mm-hmm. Dave.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very nice. Very nice. I depend on Steve for lots of things. So for the uninitiated out there, for example, we have young Deacon, 12 years old, listening for the first time.
Nice.
Reintroduce the urge to the audience.
Oh my. I'll let you take that.
Give a shot?
Or me? Yeah. You're more OG than I am. Man.
So we've been around since really like 87.
Yeah.
As a band officially. And, we started off making little indie records here in the region and getting on the road, getting in the van and touring. And things started to kind of take off for us like in the early 90s. And John joined the band. What year was that?
94.
Yep, so we were actually kind of taking a little break, and John joined the band. We was already another band that we were really good friends with.
Yeah.
And that's really when things really started taking off for us. We got John and Jerry joined the band as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we really hit it, and that's when we really got really serious about doing it.
Yeah, John and Jerry help every band.
That's a good start.
Yeah. That's a good start.
Well, we played, Jerry and I had been playing together since we were 14.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first time I saw The Urge. We opened for them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In the summer of 89 at Duke's.
Oh, yeah,
Right next to Fox. They used to be Duke's.
Yeah. Forgot about
So they used to do Friday nights there. Our band opened up for them. We became friends. Our band split up. Jeff Herschel, the original Urge drummer, left the band.
So,
and I went, and 6 months later, Jerry joined.
Were you and Jerry like in school together? Is that how you knew each other?
Yeah, we're the same age. He's a year younger school-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So when I joined the band... with him, he was still in eighth grade. I was a freshman.
How well could you guys play back then?
Oh, well, I joined the band as a rhythm guitar player, and I knew about four chords.
Okay,
so, but they finally realized I was a better drummer than I was a guitar player.
Yeah,
so I eventually just became the drummer.
I said
that lasted one gig. We played a party, and I pretended I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, we were having band practice for my band last week, and I was talking to my drummer Eric, and I'm like, "So who's the best untrained drummer in St. Louis? Is it Pistone?" And Dave Kyles goes, "What do you mean untrained?" Mm-hmm. And in my mind,
I never had a lesson in anything. Yeah,
so I was right.
Yeah. No. I mean, that doesn't mean nowadays you can learn from everybody. You know what I mean? The internet's quite a...
Isn't that amazing?
And I've actually gotten back to basics. As you get older, everything's getting harder, right? So I'm kind of back to basics. But I mean, my high school teacher taught me very basic stick rudiments and things like that.
Yeah.
To play in band. But other than that, I've never had a drum lesson. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just kind of started doing it.
Andrew, what was it a couple years ago that when I had that national teacher, the drummer on the show, and I bought a new set of Gretsches?
Uh-huh.
And because, I only play drums at shows. I don't practice. Whatever's left in me, that's what I got.
Gotcha.
But I decided, you know what? I'm going to learn to play these drums. Uh-huh. I'm going to do a Neil Peart. I'm going to take it down to the floor.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And I never did one thing. I never played one rudiment. I never watched a video. I'm like, this sounds hard, and I don't want to do it.
So. I couldn't have done what Neil did. That would have... Because not to be weird, I felt the same way for him. He was a little bit old dog, new tricks, and it's almost like, dude, you've already changed all of our lives. You don't really need to. There's nothing you need to fix.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think he did the Buddy Rich thing, and he played with all his jazz bows.
Yeah.
And went, oh, all these guys have technique.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I should work on that. I'm like, no, you don't need to. You can do. They can't do what you do. You know what I mean? Like, that's what makes musicians great to me.
I always heard Neil was embarrassed by that performance.
What's that?
That he was embarrassed.
He was, and he was out of his element. I don't think he was terrible, but it wasn't his thing.
Yeah.
If you ask me to go play a speed metal gig, it's going to be terrible. I'm not good at that. That's not my thing.
Dang it.
So.
That's kind of happening with Flea right now, too.
Yeah.
His whole thing is like he wants to be recognized.
Oh, he made like a jazz record, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, really?
More recognized as a musician.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, John, are you like this? Yeah. Like, you do a great solo in El Monstero, but I hate drum solos.
I can't stand them.
I've always hated them.
I hate playing them. I don't like them. I don't like them when other people do them.
Yeah.
I'm in two tributes where it's Rush and Zeppelin. It's got to happen, right? Monstero one, I've been trying to talk him out of doing it for forever. And Kevin's always like, people like it, man.
Yeah.
So it was very, very short Saturday.
Yeah.
It was no longer than a minute.
Okay.
You know, just some... Here's some hot licks and you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
Here's some blah, 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 and then get off.
Yeah, no, even Neil, seeing him live.
Yeah. Well, his is a piece.
Yeah.
He worked out a composition. Yeah. I mean, which is, that takes a level of concentration and patience I lack.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So you guys are doing Kansas City, right?
Yes. That's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're back here Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And where's that going to be?
That's out at St. Louis Music Park.
Okay.
And that's us and Less Than Jake. Which is cool. Remember Less Than Jake from like Sky Band from back in the 90s? They're on the show with us. And then My Posse in Effect, which is from St. Louis.
Very nice. Beastie Boy tribute, yes.
Very cool.
That's going to be awesome.
Very cool.
So show up. If you're coming, please get there as early as you can. You don't want to miss any of it. So.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
And what else you guys doing? Other side projects?
Well, we got a new song.
Yeah, we do. We got to finish it, but we do have a new tune.
We're gonna rock a new jam. So.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. You recorded it yet?
No, we're going to play it this week, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's the plan. Yeah.
Yes.
What is recording like? I've never really done it.
Well, now, for the most part, we do it at my house. So,
okay.
You know, I have a studio in the basement. We did go into the studio when we did the Goal song, the Blues Goal song. But the whole last record we just did in my basement. I like it. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our process is very different. Like, it's generally we record the guitar, bass, and drums together. Then everything else just gets overdubbed later, you know, added later. So Steve will come in later and we'll just have vocal days, you know,
right.
I just do vocals. Because vocals, you kind of go till you're shot, right?
Yeah.
And you go, okay, well, that's getting a little rusty. Let's come back at another day.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, well, then we'll bring the horn guys in and they'll do some horns while we're at it, you know. So Steve's got a good hour or two in him and you do that until your voice is gone and come back on a day when you're fresh. So, but I like it. It's fun, man.
I watched a doc. Rewarding. You've probably seen it about the Wrecking Crew.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that's cool. Just all those albums those guys played on.
Well, okay, speaking of Neil Peart, that's one of my favorite Neil Peart quotes ever that he made. He said, I didn't realize till I was 18 years old, that my five favorite drummers were Hal Blaine.
Yeah.
He's like he's on everything that he liked. He goes, and those guys played on anything that came out of L.A. back then, man. It was all those same guys.
What about
guys.
Bernard Purdy saying that he redid all the Ringo tracks?
He says he plays on. he said he played on 21 Beatles songs. He swears by it.
Yeah.
Really?
Here's the funny thing about that, man, and I'm a Beatle fanatic. It wouldn't shock me that much from the standpoint that that's how things were just done. Mm. Like, think about how busy they were, right? So it wouldn't shock me if they, like, had a rhythm track, at least a drum track or something ready to go. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he's completely full of it. He goes, I don't care anymore. He goes, I know what I know. He goes, I get all kinds of hate. I don't know. It's funny in a way.
Well, whoever did it.
Think about it when they did the first record.
Yeah.
Ringo, you know, they had Alan White ready to go.
On the simplest drum track of all time.
Andy White.
Yeah, Love Me Do.
But, you know, he didn't know if Ringo was even any good, so he brought in a guy because he knew time is money.
Yeah.
So I'm getting this, like, it happens more than you think, you know? So, who knows? I doubt it's Bernard. None of it sounds like Bernard Purdy.
I'm like, does it sound like him?
Yeah. No. And it all sounds like Ringo.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you told me it was, I don't know, Hal Blaine, I'd probably believe it. It doesn't sound like Bernard Purdy.
Yeah. And I love, too, it's like, if you see me play drums, you'll go, oh, Ringo and Peter Chris.
Yeah.
Like, because that's what I heard. And Back in Black, every drummer, that's what, you know.
Yeah.
And I never learned, I learned a few tricks, but like Daryl Whited was my drummer for 15 years.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And he's solid as can
be. Of course
he
is, yeah.
But he wasn't tricky. And a couple times he did something.
He is. He just doesn't do it.
Exactly.
He can. Daryl can.
I looked back at him like, what the hell?
He keeps it simple. Yeah. Oh, he did like a Latin thing one time and like blew my mind. I was like, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I studied with a bunch of my friends. I think they said my friends were Brazilian.
Yeah.
And they showed me how to do all this stuff. I'm like, holy cow. Can you show me? Like,
Steve, do you still have the same drummer in the Steve Ewing band?
I've been playing with Miles Vandiver for quite a while. Same drummer, yeah.
Yeah, big black dude.
No, that was Demarius Hicks, actually. Last time you saw
that dude.
Demarius. Yep.
And Demarius is good, too, yeah.
Another really good drummer, yeah.
Church drummer, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Gospel chops, baby.
Yeah, gospel chops.
Jazz, yeah.
Stuff I cannot do.
I've been the most fortunate individual as I've played music with the best drummers around.
Yeah.
This one here. John, I wanted to say, when he was already, we already recognized him as an unbelievable musician. When he first joined up, we immediately got in the practice space and wrote something like that.
Yeah.
We wrote Violent Opposition.
Yeah. Like, you know, like the first practice.
The first practice.
Yeah. It was
amazing. Yeah.
It was cool.
Well, you kind of do everything, which I didn't realize because I was a big fan of yours just as a drummer back when we were becoming buddies.
Yeah.
And I walked into Killer Vintage and some guy was just like slapping the bass and it was him.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, my first band, you practice at the drummer's house, right? Well, everybody leaves their stuff there.
Yeah.
So I already knew a few chords on the guitar. I never played the bass. I just started picking them up. And
yeah.
You know, to me, I can't function as a musician unless I know how to play a little bit of everything, right? You know what I mean? Like, how involved can you get in songwriting when you go, I don't know what chord that is, but that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, I want to know what I'm doing. So,
yeah,
I love playing guitar and bass. I'm just not, it's not natural to me. I'm a drummer.
Yeah.
Who can play a little bit of guitar and bass. That's
great.
The way I look at it. Yeah.
Steve, how's the voice holding up? Just, you know, as we're all aging vocalists and you'll see guys like Axl.
Yeah.
Or Lou Gramm, and you're like, oh man, it's coming for me. Are you still holding up?
I'm still holding up. I have ups and downs. As like this year, I have 190 shows.
Ooh.
So as I get towards the end of the year, it starts to get a little just harder and harder. I got to do more warm-ups. I can't just go into a show anymore.
Yeah.
So, but yes, it's doing good. Yeah.
You know what I did at my Del Mar show a couple months ago for the first time ever? Someone, I think it's Farver, said, you need to hydrate starting 2 days before.
It's 2 days. Like once you dehydrate, you can't come back.
So it made such a difference.
Yeah, you have to hydrate well in advance.
Yeah. I drink water all day long. Yeah. Just I have water with me at all times.
Yeah.
I didn't bring one in here with me, but it is in the car. Yeah.
How was Night Ranger this weekend?
They were great. They were great. I don't want to tell too much of a story. I had an interesting story conversation with Kelly Kagi, the drummer, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows he sings Sister Christian. He's dealing with some vocal stuff.
Oh.
He's dealing with like an inner, he's like, I have trouble finding a pitch.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yep.
It's tough.
He's 74, man. He looks amazing. He looks like he's my age.
If I would have done the math, I would have figured that, but he doesn't seem 74.
Yeah, Jack Blades is 72. They were awesome, man. They still ripped. They just ripped. They're so good.
Those guys came into my show in like 2002.
Yeah.
And stayed for like 2 hours. They're the nicest guys.
They are. They're great. Yeah, super they were super cool. Yeah, it was really fun.
So Saturday night, how do people get tickets? Do we still talk about that anymore? Or do people just...
Yep.
Ticketmaster.
Ticketmaster.
That's your friend, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
And then, tomorrow we're playing with, that's with Cypress Hill in Kansas City.
Get out!
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
That's cool.
That's going to be interesting, yeah.
That's
really cool. I'm excited about seeing
them. It's going to be fun.
That's awesome. That's Steve Ewing and John Pisoni from The Urge. Good to see you, fellas.
Always, man.
Yeah,
always.
Nice
family stay. Yeah.
I thought that I heard you sing.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This one goes out to the one I love.
Welcome back, guys. DJ WGSNKMOX, just shooting the crap there with Steve Ewing and John Pisoni on the break. Love those guys. Martin Coco joins us. He runs all the marketing over for the Cardinals. Martin, always good to talk to you, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good to be with you, Dave.
You too. So you guys have some exciting, fun stuff. By the way, well done. You guys have done really well this year. The team's done well, and just the ballpark experience is noticeably better. The tarps off thing really kicked in, so everyone's having a good time.
Man, it's been so much fun. You know, sometimes expectations might be what they are with the team, but we've been having a lot of fun at the ballpark, and the team's been playing well, and some things just fall into your lap, like the tarps off thing, which has just been really cool.
And you know, like, we'll always get the credit, you know, the boys from Austin, that was great. But it's fun to see, like, all the different buildings around the MLB doing it now, too.
It's been crazy to see how it started here and has really grown all over baseball and even into some other sports, and has continued to be really strong here. That's one of the questions we had was, will this eventually kind of die out? But there's a lot of games where that whole section in right field is completely full.
Yeah, you got to love it. You got to love it.
It's an interesting thing, too, Martin, because, like, you guys plan a lot. Like, you spend a whole off season coming up with plans, promotions, ideas, and then all of a sudden something comes up. And you just roll with it. And like that, or, you know, Jordan Walker winning the home run derby, and then you get a chance to be a little creative on the fly.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I like to use the, it's better to be lucky than good. So we'll take a little bit of both. Plan, but then be ready to adapt when cool stuff happens. Like you mentioned, the home run derby. That was really great.
So, Martin, let's talk a little bit about what you guys are doing over at Busch Stadium this weekend. I'll start with Thursday, which is a makeup game versus the D-backs, 4:15 game, and you guys have happy hour all game.
Yeah, it's a unique game time. We really don't ever, especially during the week, have a 4:15 game time. That was necessitated by a rainout back in June. So it's a one game with the Diamondbacks, and we decided if we're going to play at 4:15, let's just make it a happy hour. So there's $5 tickets, a bunch of drink specials, $5 beers, $5 hot dogs. So if folks are looking for a happy hour on Thursday, just do it at the ballpark.
And then Friday, you just talked about Jordan Walker winning the home run derby. You're going to commemorate that on Friday?
We are. You know, it was a real challenge on the timeline. Our promo team stepped up and was able to get a T-shirt produced on almost no notice, and we just happened to have an open date on the calendar right there, close to the derby. So we have a really cool Jordan Walker Home Run Derby Champ T-shirt giveaway. And then the extra special thing that I'm really excited we're able to do is all weekend against the Reds, we play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have the Home Run Derby trophy, and the really cool chain that they gave him, if fans saw that, it's a Philly kind of Liberty Bell Home Run Derby champ. We'll have both of those here in the ballpark available for photo ops the whole weekend long.
That's cool. And then Saturday and Sunday, you have blue jerseys on Saturday, best jerseys in baseball. And Sunday, you have Fred Bird hats for the kids.
We do, and I'm interested to hear you say that's the best jersey in baseball. As fans may know, that's the road Saturday jersey. So no fan in St. Louis, unless you've traveled to a road game on a Saturday, has seen that in person. So we decided to tie that in with the giveaway. And the team is actually going to wear those blue uniforms in the game at home for the first time.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Man, that's fun. That's a fun weekend.
Yeah, we're right in the heart of it. You know, summer baseball, a lot going on. Really, every game there's something going on. And then we follow that big, busy weekend with the Cubs coming to town for a four-game series. So it's a busy week plus here at the ballpark.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll see you up in the booth one of these homestands soon.
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you, Martin. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Ricky Horton joins us. Hello, Rick.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? How are you?
Very well, man. Great to talk to you. Good to have you guys back home. Looking forward to being at the ballpark a few games over the weekend and next week. Let's start with the bad. Last couple games have been emotionally disappointing, and I'm just curious, as a former big league pitcher and the current broadcaster, how games like that ending, like especially the one last night, how that hits you?
Yeah, I feel like the one before hit them too, because they did like five main things wrong to really just give that game away. And of course, you could say they gave it away yesterday, but, you know, they rallied. They had good at-bats, and it just wasn't, you know, Riley O'Brien's day. So that kind of happened faster. It's still disappointing because it's the bottom of the ninth. But when you've got a 7-0 lead, I think that one stays with you a little bit more. But, you know, it's still the odd thing about this. I mean, you can't say do-over. You know, we used to say that in the backyard. Like, if you had a bad start to a game, you say do-over. You go back to the top of this. I don't know how many we got of those, but it seems like you use them whenever you want. But you can't do that in the big leagues. You got to count it. And, of course, the Cardinals have won some games they should have lost. So, you know, you hope that it balances out by the end of the day. But kind of the good news of this, and it's not even, I don't know, it's not, you don't want to hang your hat on it, but, you know, every team that you're in the wild card battle with, they all lost yesterday. So you can say, well, you're still the wild card as of today, but you didn't gain ground is kind of the bad part of it.
It's a fascinating timing. You know, last few years, Ricky, we've always, you know, you're coming up on trade deadline time. We've talked about how that impacts players, how teams make decisions. Yeah. We've seen the team buy. We've seen the team sell. And I think, you know, this year is a different mix because it's a different year, right? I mean, Ollie was on today, the Gas House Gang, and he raised an interesting question that he asked the guys about, which was basically asking about how the players are performing compared to what you would have expected coming into the year, which is an interesting way to frame it, because there were a lot of I don't knows coming into the year. And I think my takeaway is we still have a lot of I don't knows. We still have a lot that we're figuring out.
Well, and then, that's part of it. That's part of the development thing is you can take a snapshot on, you know, on day, you know, July 1, then you can take a snapshot on August 1. I mean, depends on when you take the snapshot, right. But if you'd have taken the snapshot the last day of spring training, you would have said things aren't going very well for Jordan Walker.
Right.
You take that snapshot now and you say, okay, he's good. He's pretty good. We'll keep him. But, you know, but there's other guys, I agree with you, that, you know, what's the upside of Ivan Herrera? I don't really know. I mean, I think the guy is a better hitter than what he's doing right now. But, you know, he just could be just having a bad month, a bad couple of weeks. And then you turn around and on the September 1, he's hitting .280 and you just can't wait to see him bat again. So it's just, again, when you kind of look at it, but you have to let time be the healer on that. But, you know, right now there's too much stress on what happens in the next 10 days. Sometimes you just have to make that decision right now.
That's the hard part. You know, I think, you know, at the end of, like, for me, 6 months tells us the story. And look, like using Herrera as the example, sometimes I should say, a guy will have a better than normal year or a less than normal year. And that's normal for guys to waver a little bit up and down.
Of course.
But in this moment for fans, for, you know, observers, I'm sure for Heim Bloom in the front office, a lot of it is about now. Like, okay, what do I know now? Because decisions have to be made in 10 days or so.
Yeah. So take two guys for an example. And I have no idea what Heim's going to do. And maybe he's not fully sure yet. But, you know, take two guys in particular, take Dustin May and take Riley O'Brien. You say, well, you know, right now you think, well, you know, Riley O'Brien just blew a save. Maybe he's not as marketable to some team. Or Dustin May had a really bad start his last time. So, you know, what's his? And then it's like, well, what do other teams think about him? Are they saying, well, I don't know about him now? I mean, you can almost take too much stock in what they're doing the 2 weeks leading into the trading deadline. What you really want to know is what do you expect them to do in August and September? And that's kind of unknowable, but you might take a flyer on somebody that's got talent and maybe is not doing very well because you might get him cheaper.
So a quick question on each of those guys from your view, because obviously, you know, you did this, you pitched in the big leagues, and I'm curious what you see, because Riley's had overall a good year. I think everybody would agree. The All-Star appearance was justified. I will say that the command has changed quite a bit about the last 15 or so games, about the last month and a half, where I think he had 4 walks total at the end of May for the whole season. And he's got, I think, 11 since the start of June, which is a pretty big increase in that. Is this something that's mechanical? Is this Riley just learning how to do this? Because he's never done this before for a full season in the big leagues. Even though he's 31, he's just never done this before.
I think it's mechanical in that it's in his mechanics. That's my personal view of it. He's got a very he's got to be timed up right for everything to work, because he's got nasty movement, which is created by the torque that he has, by the sidearm delivery that he has. And you, when you throw a sweeper, we see this all the time. We see guys hit sweepers in the back. And you think, what are they doing? Why did that happen? Well, to throw a sweeper, I mean, the mechanics of that have to be so precise that if you throw it right, they're not going to hit it. If you throw it wrong, it's going to spin up there and hit the guy in the back. It's just what happens. And so I think there's some mechanics in that. And I think his mechanics are maybe not as repeatable as others. You look like a Kyle Leahy. So he's pretty straightforward in what he does. And, you know, others would be that way. And it's not a bad thing. It's what I think gives Riley his value, because the movement and the velocity and all that is wonderful. But, you know, it's a little unpredictable.
Am I crazy to feel like I'm seeing a similar thing with May also over about the last, what, really since the complete game? Like, it just...
Yeah, no, I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's got... He's searching for kind of, you know, there's command versus stuff, and you're always kind of going back and forth. So you throw one as hard as you can, and you overthrow it, and then you just flip it up there, you underthrow it. And so it's almost like a batter being in between. Like he's late on the fastball, he's ahead on the breaking ball. So
we lost for a second.
Hello. Are you there?
Yeah, we got you back now, Rick.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what happened. I was surfer walking by the beach here. Sorry about that.
It's interesting to me, too, Ricky, to hear you. I'd love to hear you explain for listeners how you can be doing, you know, executing your mechanics, the correct mechanics, but maybe not at the right pace or in the right sequence or with the correct timing as well.
Yeah, timing is such a big part of baseball. It, you know, people wonder all the time. We had this discussion the other day about people who are great athletes and can't play baseball very well. Let's talk about Michael Jordan for a minute. I mean, you know, Michael Jordan was the greatest athlete maybe on the planet at that time, and he hit 150 in the minor leagues, and he thought it would be easier, and he basically proved to the world that hitting is hard.
Yeah.
And so you could be athletic, you could be prepared, you can be strong, you can do all of those things, flexible, but the timing that comes into both pitching and hitting is extraordinarily precise. That it can sometimes come and go.
Rick, I'm curious. I'm impressed with the whole coaching staff of the Cardinals, and I'm fascinated with how much of, say, Dusty's position as a pitching coach, when you're coaching big leaguers, right? They've been pitching since they're 7 years old. How much is, well, you hold your fingers on the seams like this, and how much is sort of being a therapist?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think what it is now, Dave, frankly, is maybe a third thing. Here's what the numbers are saying about the way the ball is coming out of your hand. And here's what the video that we took shows about, you know, your biomechanics, that you're not using your hips the way, if you added your hips, you could add 2%, 2 miles an hour in velocity. It's they're more telling you about you, the technical parts about you that you can't really put your finger on. Maybe you can feel it, maybe you can't, but they're trying to match what you feel and what you think with what all these numbers and mechanics say. I think it's more that now, honestly. You have to do the other things too, but I think being a pitching coach is harder. That's why we have three of them instead of just one of them now. I mean, and most teams do.
Yeah, and a lot of teams have, both on the hitting and the pitching side, one of those people that's a pitching coach is more a scientist, like a biomechanics person, as opposed to a pitching person.
Yeah. So let me say that 100%. And the Cardinals were so good. Brad Thompson and I spent an afternoon out in the bullpen when guys were throwing their bullpens at Busch Stadium one day. They invited us to just hang out and watch. I watched Matthew Liberatore throw his pen, and several other guys were just doing little tune-up sessions. All the pitchers were out there. They're showing us all of the new kind of metric things that they have, and the way they would judge velocity and spin rate and all that stuff and how it works and what they're looking for and the axis. I mean, it was incredibly complex, but really helpful to us. And I just realized you need more than one person to do that. It's a pretty big job.
Rick, I wanted to ask you about we talked about this story about an hour ago veteran umpire Bill Miller got in the way of a play a couple days ago, and the pitcher called him a fat ass mofo. And I'm just wondering what you make of that. Do you think the pitcher owes the ump an apology? Is that over the edge?
Well, it's actually the first I've heard of this, but my gut reaction is 100%. I mean, look, umpires are human. Baseball players, I mean, people, they treat people regardless of whether they're making a mistake or they're in the way, whatever. I just think, I don't know about that situation, but generally I would say, I think the game of baseball and our culture in general could use more respect and more appreciation of other people than less. And so I would vote in favor of whatever gets people back in line again.
Amen, brother.
That's a good point. You'll probably see it, Ricky. It's pretty bad. It's a ground ball up the middle where Miller's trying to get out of the way. He seems to think that the shortstop is going to make the play, but actually the way the infield was positioned, the second baseman had the better play, and he went in the direction to clear out of the shortstop's way, but then got in the second baseman's way, and then it was Tyler Ferguson of the Reds turned around and called him all the names. Yeah.
Well, you know, when a player never gets picked off a base or never makes a base running error or never throws to the wrong base or never drops a fly ball, then, you know, I mean, honestly, I just don't have much stomach for that.
Yeah. He, by the way, gave up a grand slam to Cal Raleigh in that same sequence. So, yeah. I wonder if his teammates had anything to say to him.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Enjoy your last day on the beach. We'll see you back here real soon.
Did I lose you?
Let's just pretend we did.
I'll always be there.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love.
GSMKMOX.
I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Vic asks if I got my custom Rawlings glove yet. Vic, I don't have it, but it is at Rawlings. Got a call yesterday, so I'm going to go either tomorrow or Thursday and pick it up. Excited.
You going to bring it to the ballpark?
Yes. Man, that guy is so hateable. The Hample guy. Oh, God. The way he gets in that kid's face and puts the ball in his face, he needs his ass kicked.
Dude, that guy needs to be banned from every Major League stadium by Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
He's a terror. There's no point to it. I can't see how Major League Baseball benefits from someone just taking advantage of other customers.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video of... It was at Wrigley, right? The guy.
Yeah,
yeah. So there's a kid, like, you know, not a 20s. Kid, but 20s, sitting down during the national anthem.
Yep.
And an older guy behind him is telling him, get up, stand up, show some respect. And the kid's saying no. So the old guy smacks him in the back of the head. And then the kid stands up.
Yeah.
So the internet's divided because, of course, somebody are like, good, you need a good smack. You love the United States. And people are like, you don't smack a guy just for having different political beliefs as you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one, we have the freedom to do what we want. That's the whole point of our Constitution, of our form of government. It's the whole purpose of why people who serve the country so that we do have that choice. I don't do what that kid did. I wouldn't do that. But I also wouldn't hit somebody either. Would I talk to him after the fact or would, I mean, I can understand, you know, I understand where the older guy's coming from in the sense that, hey, stand up and be respectful. And I don't have a problem if somebody says that. You don't put your hands on somebody. You don't get to assault someone. Because, and again, that's an exaggeration. It was a smack. It's still physical interaction. You don't get to put your hands on someone because they hurt your feelings. Because that's what happened. The older fan got his feelings hurt. Because that young fan doesn't share his love for the anthem or whatever. But that's okay. You don't get to put your hands on somebody for that. At the same time, if you're that kid and you're not going to stand, why'd you stand after he hit you?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, not to sound too much like my friend Kevin, but You slap somebody, you better be ready to be slapped back.
I would have hit the guy back, and I mean, again, it's not, I wouldn't be sitting during the anthem. That's not me. But if you put your hands on me like that, you're getting them back, period. And that's where I think, you're that older guy, you got to be careful. And maybe you look at that guy and don't think he's a threat, but anybody 20 years younger than you is a threat to you. Maybe don't do that, because if he hits you, you might get really hurt.
Rach, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I understand feeling that everyone should show respect. But like Wheel said, we live in a free country. And if we force each other to act like we are patriotic when we're not actually feeling patriotic, that's not freedom.
Right.
That's, just playing a part. Like, do you want your kids to show you affection because they genuinely want to, or because they're scared you're going to slap them if you don't? I think most people are going to go with the option of I want them to genuinely, like, show me that familial bond. I don't want to have to, like, beat it out of them. I feel the same way about the country.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I want people to want to show their patriotism and want to show their respect. If they don't want to, I don't want them to feel pressured into doing it.
I'm a little surprised and disappointed, because I'm a stand for the anthem guy, Jack Glover's son.
Yeah.
But, Rach, you and I have experienced this before together at games. When you're out in the concourse, in your seats, and the anthem starts playing, I'm not trying to be like, I'm Mr. America, but whatever I'm doing, I always stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're showing respect. There are plenty of people who just, I see so many
just
men.
Go. Still on their phones.
Men who don't remove their hats.
Yes.
Yep.
Men and women who don't stop eating their nachos, who don't stop their conversations.
Yeah.
And, it does bother me. I do wish that they would show that attention and show that respect. But it is, the way to get them to do that is not to be like, I'm going to whip your butt if you don't show that you love this country. Like, no, I'd rather them just gain some respect from their, like, lived experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, the guy who did the slapping came out after the fact and apologized. Said I was wrong. He's a veteran. He gets upset, which is fine. That doesn't excuse it, though. I'm glad you're apologizing and accepting the fact that you were wrong in that moment. It doesn't excuse putting your hands on somebody.
Yeah, it's not okay.
Like, if you want to talk to that person, even if you want to scold them, fine. You're in a public place. You can tell them you think they're classless, whatever. But you still have to follow the law and follow the rules, and also understand that all of our freedoms are the freedoms for us to choose.
Mm-hmm.
It's not freedom if you're forced to conform. That's the exact opposite of what freedom is. If everyone has to conform, that's North Korea. That's an authoritarian state where people have to show patriotism.
Yeah.
So, I would love to see people who feel that strongly also have some common sense, too.
Yeah.
Because I'm like you. I think it's a respect thing, and I'm okay with it. I like the national anthem. I think it's cool. But I don't think anyone else has to like what I like.
Yep.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and, in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.